Thank you all for coming and hosting me this evening. I always feel so honored to be a part of this. So I have a great deal of questions to get to tonight, but as always, I invite us to go inward. We want this to be more than just talk, just philosophy. We want to be experiencing the truth. That's why we meet together. Is to directly experience the truth. To directly experience your own divinity. And so I invite you to take some deep, full breaths, to come into the belly, deep within the hara. And to simply be here now. Notice this quiet radiance, what you are. This quiet radiance, which is hearing my voice. This quiet radiance beyond thought, beyond emotion. What is this that's here? What is this stillness? This stillness which is awake, which is aware. Which is innocent. So will you join me in meeting together in this peace? The peace of our true nature. Will you join me in opening? Opening the crown chakra, the third eye. Opening the throat and the heart. The solar plexus. The lower belly, the hara, the pelvis. Will you join me in opening fully? And experiencing the hugeness. The hugeness of what you truly are. A vast presence. Will you join me in letting go of any thoughts you're having, any struggle, any challenges, and simply acknowledge this quiet radiance what you are, this immeasurable stillness. All day long, we think we know what we are. As our mind throws up this thought and that thought, as we're identified with our past, we think we are these characters in a play. And take it all too seriously, all too real. And so, can we allow the play to dissolve? Can we allow the character to dissolve? And just notice what's here. What's here right now? What is this beautiful thing which you are? What is this quiet, vast stillness? What happens to you when you let go into the stillness? What happens to your thoughts, your struggle? Your history? When you let go and allow yourself to be immense. So can you notice this beauty, this vastness, this spaciousness, this luminosity? Throughout your energetic body. Can you notice this wonderful presence in your feet, in your calves and your shins, your knees and your thighs, your pelvis? Can you notice this gentle aliveness which has no problem, no struggle? Can you notice a sense of power in your heart? A sense of quiet strength in your solar plexus? Can you notice a sense of brilliance? And gentle love in your heart. Can you notice an openness in the throat chakra? And a vastness in the space we normally call the mind? And can you notice an incredible radiance in the crown of your head? Incredible radiance. So, will you join me in opening to this? To this beauty which we are? And simultaneously, will you join me in opening to this grace from above, a heavenly grace? If any of you are sensitive, you will notice when we come together, grace pours through this Sangha, pours through this community. Very brilliant grace. It may even feel as if it's subtly burning because of the intensity of it. And your job is simply to open, to notice what's here and open. If God comes to you, if the Holy Spirit shows up in your life, if a new evolutionary grace comes into you, your job is to acknowledge what's here. Acknowledge God's will, God's flow. Acknowledge her intelligence and brilliance. So I encourage you just to invite this divinity to flow into your body, to come fully into you. And see what reality is bringing us. Can we open and surrender our bodies? Surrender our soul, our life, to this greater reality. And so I invite you just to continue to open, continue experiencing what's here, what's coming. Simply notice what's here. And so I'm going to begin to shift gears here and answer some of these questions. And of course, if anyone has a question, feel free to type one in or ask me for the mic or whatever it is. Any way you want to get a hold of me. But I continue to have this funny experience on Sunday afternoons. I get these terrible headaches right before our class, normally about 3 hours before. And I was reflecting on my time with my teacher, and we used to do so much work together, and he used to always tell me, before our Wednesday night class, And he said, "Craig, I need to rest. I need to go lay down and get ready for our class." And I would notice that he would, quickly put our work down and go inside and take a rest. And oftentimes it looked like he was in pain. And so I asked him about this. I asked him if he was okay, if everything was okay. And he used to say, "Yeah, just normally before I teach," is what he would say. There's an intense energy that comes into me, an intense grace. And sometimes it's difficult on my body. And I laugh now because at the time I thought I understood what he was going through, but now, normally before I teach, there's this an intensity of light that comes into me. If I was untrained, I would just call it a headache. But this is part of the spiritual path. This is part of the cross that we carry. If you're opening into new realms, if you're opening to new worlds of light and love and bliss and peace, well, there's going to be times when it's going to be difficult. There's going to be times when your body doesn't understand it. Oftentimes, before an individual opens into peace or a new level of peace, they get really sleepy. My teacher Ajahn, his teacher said this funny thing once. His teacher Jikusho Kwong said, "Yeah, sometimes when a lot of people come to our public meetings, he looks out at the audience and he sees a lot of people falling asleep." He says it's one of the things that happens when a lower consciousness comes into contact with the truth. If they're not ready, sometimes they fall asleep. I always thought that was funny because it's so true. But it's easy if something intense comes into us for us to respond with our normal egoic reaction, which is to fight or to run or to freeze or, in this case, to fall asleep. Now, if we don't understand something fully, we normally respond from the status quo. We respond from ego. And so the first question I would like to talk about was from a friend named Eric. He says, "I'm coming to the point where it seems like I can do this partially. Like it's either I give up everything or nothing. And there's no halfway, there's no lukewarm way. I have this feeling like I have to give up my personality, all my goals, my entire will. And there's no way of keeping my will and God's will. It feels as if I have to die to this truth." And yes, I want to focus at first on the last part of his question. Because a lot of individuals see the path this way, that there's this great ego death. And there's some truth to that. But one of the things the ego does, again, when it doesn't understand something, or if it's frightened of changing, it makes it into a very dramatic story. Ego death. I have to die. But like when you are transitioning out of middle school and into high school, it is true. Part of you had to part of you had to grow up, part of you had to let go of that old old way of being at middle school and adopt a new way of being in the world in high school. But it wasn't really a death. Over that summer in between middle school and high school, I'm sure there was a transformation for most of us. But all this talk and all this nonsense about ego death, it's actually quite ridiculous. And even people who go through ego death, and it will seem as if the ego has completely fallen away, it'll never arise again. We may even spend months or years in a state, a state like this, where we feel so utterly empty, so utterly free, that nothing could ever arise again. But it just seems that way. It seems that way. There's no true ego death. But we can evolve out of the old way of being and into a new way of being. But it seems very dramatic at first. And oftentimes people come to me, they say, "Craig, I have to give up everything." Well, you don't have to. And you're just letting go of something that's old and unusable and stepping into something that's new and much greater. Not many of us, if we grew up in the 80s, are holding on to our Commodore 64 computer. People who play video games, they're not holding on to their Atari systems. If you can remember your first cell phone, you're not holding on to it for dear life and saying, "Oh, I need this. I need to hold on to this old phone." You say, "I don't want that. It's useless. I want a smartphone that has all the apps and can do all the things and I can listen to podcasts on and watch YouTube and it has navigation." And so it's almost humorous to me because we have to remember we're letting go into God. We're letting go out of middle school and into high school. And then out of high school and into college. And then out of college and into being hopefully an adult, And so it should feel good to let go. We have to remember it's an upgrade, not a downgrade. If you're letting go of your iPhone 6 or 7 or 8 and getting that giant phone that looks like a brick from 1999, then yeah, that'd be terrible. But we're letting go into God's grace, God's intelligence, God's love. We're letting go into knowing ourself as God. As my teacher Ajah said, it's like paying a dollar for the universe. It's like, come on, are you willing to pay a dollar and get the whole universe in return? I mean, the trade is ridiculous. And there's this, grand idea, that it just happens all at once. And sometimes it does, but more often than not, it just seems like it does. And then you have to go through all the layers and levels a few months down the road. And so, yes, you let go of your will and into God's will. But if you keep walking forward, what you discover is God's will is your will, that God has your greatest interest in mind, that you and God are one. That you and God are one. And there's not actually two. The whole idea of two was just a point of confusion. Just a point of confusion. And that's why normally, or often when people radically wake up, sometimes we burst into hysterical laughter or great tears of letting go and the tears of joy occur. I can remember on the morning or afternoon, whatever it was, of my first real awakening. I mean, I laughed and cried. I mean, oh, at first I cried. I cried and laughed for a good 4 hours. I was pulling muscles in my stomach from having such hysterical laughter. I mean, it's incredible to let go of the lower identity. The lower identity, it's a hell world. And so this idea of ego death, it's, or dying into something, it's just, you know, I feel it's overly dramatic language. It's more like, you know, just having the best day of your life, and then that times a thousand. Times a thousand. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. And of course, that's just the first step. Just the first step. That's getting your foot in the door. And so, yes, are you willing to let go of that which doesn't serve you? And to step into something far greater. Far greater. Are you willing to let go of your old computer system, which doesn't even work anymore? You know, that old laptop that's, you know, sitting in a drawer somewhere or in a closet. The battery doesn't charge anymore. The functions don't really work. The keys are kind of, you know, not really registering. Are you willing to let go of that? You know, and have a brand new operating system. Are you willing to trust that it's something good? Something good is coming forward. Are you willing to trust in God, trust in life? Trust that this is an intelligent journey. By that I mean the whole point of the path is to step into something greater. And so, yes, thank you, Eric. Thank you for this question. And yeah, you can try to do it partially if you like, but it'll just take a whole lot longer. And again, it's like if you want to use your old laptop, you can. But why? If you have a brand new computer right there on your desk. The more you use the old computer, the old operating system, the more you suffer. That's just how that works. And keep in mind, it's an upgraded version of your own self, of your own life, of your own truth. Many people have this idea that if they open to the truth, they immediately have to give up their wife and their kids and their car and, you know, go move into the monastery or something like that. But the real truth is, you discover the world is your monastery. The world is divine. That there's nothing wrong with your wife or your kids or your car. That there's nothing wrong with this world. Well, that's step one. Stepping into reality. So, now I'm going to look at, I have a bunch of questions about healing our humanity. You know, this individual, I think I got some of the questions confused here, but I think this one's from Buffy. She writes, "It's confusing. I had this spiritual awakening, and I slide so much back and forth, almost forgetting the states. The state of I am, and then I slip back into my old consciousness, and I find this very difficult on my organism. I've been going on like this for 18 months. You know, how do I heal my humanity?" And see, this is a great question, because if you want to experience abiding awakening, a true abiding awakening, you have to have a humanity that's healed, or mostly healed. You can't have a wound that's screaming at you. You can't have, you know, psychological states of despair or pain or sadness or anger. You know, the old yogic path is we do all the purification first, but I think purification is such a terrible word. I like the word evolving. So it's important to have a healthy adult, mature psychology, a healthy adult ego, an ego that's not divided, you know, and splintered in 15 different ways. Because if our ego is splintered in 15 different ways, well, it's hard to experience oneness. And so the question is, well, how do I heal my humanity? Oh, through meeting it with love. And see, if the first stage of the path is transcendence, that's beautiful. That's necessary because it helps you to get a sense of clarity here. I am bigger than my mind. I am bigger than my emotions. That's what we tend to first realize when we step into the truth. Who and what I am is greater. Greater than this mind. At least it's not limited to this mind. It's not limited to these emotions. But at this stage, most people make this grand mistake. They look at their mind, they look at their emotions, and if they ever have a thought again, which of course they do, they get angry at their thoughts. They get angry at their humanity. And we have to remember, this path is not simply a path of transcendence. If it was, you would just transcend your thinking mind once and then disappear into transcendence. But this is also a path of love. And the good Lord has an agenda here. That we discover our heart. That we learn how to love. So what would be the point of us just stepping into peace and living in our own private bliss worlds? Well, that would be quite arrogant. Quite arrogant. So the question is, how do I heal my humanity? From this place of peace, you descend into your heart, literally, physically. You bring awareness into your heart. And you just notice what's here. You may notice that your heart is so beautiful and so open and so radiant. And if this is the case, that's wonderful. Just rest. Rest in the beauty and the love of your own heart. But for most of us, what we notice is, oh, look. You know, there's 17 little children here. One's called a critic. One of them's called, you know, I'm the one who's sad, the one who's angry, the one who's infuriated, the one who's rageful, the one who has a broken heart, the one who doesn't trust. And our job is to be just like Christ. Just like Christ, you embrace them all. Embrace them all. You know, there's this old story in the Bible. There's a couple stories, and I'm probably blend them all together because I always get the stories mixed up because my memory's not so good. Where Jesus is meeting with the rabbis, and another one where he's meeting with people at a party, you know, with people who are really, you know, I think they're really wealthy or rich. And Jesus pays attention to the sick, the downtrodden, to the prostitute. He pays attention to the ones who are struggling. He doesn't just hang out with the rabbis in the temple, you know, talking about their blissful and dual experiences. That's not what Jesus does. He holds the hands of those who are struggling. He holds their hearts. He meets them with an absolute love. An absolute love. You know, there's the story of Jesus and and meeting with the lepers, meeting with individuals who are schizophrenic. He responded with love. And so how do we do this practically? You breathe into pain. So if you come into your heart in meditation and you have an old memory of childhood, maybe of of middle school, you know, when I was at middle school, I had these friends and they used to always pick on me and make fun of me. I'm getting all these fist fights, you know, when I was a middle school boy. It was actually quite humorous, you know. We were all, so we could laugh about it, but they would just pick on me relentlessly. And so if I'm sitting in meditation and I have these old memories, I'm going to hold that child. I'm going to let him know it's okay. It's okay. What they said about you, Craig, is not the truth. What you are is this innocent child. You have a beautiful heart. Don't listen to those kids. Because the thing that happens is when we have these old memories and they form a wound within us, you know, and then we have low self-esteem and we have, you know, great feelings of unworthiness, it's very hard to allow a sense of depth and confidence to develop in your own divinity if you have unworthiness within you. It's impossible. And so through the willingness of opening your heart, getting in touch with your innocence, seeing your innocence, seeing that what you are, even in your humanity, is of value, seeing that your humanity is an expression of God, is an expression of divinity. So we don't judge our humanity. We don't fight with it. We don't say, get out of here, humanity. I hate you. Now, I tried that approach. I tried for, you know, a good part of 10 or 12 years trying to get rid of my humanity. I think I even tried for longer than that. But it's through love that our humanity heals, our wound heals. And so in that place within me, I grew up with tremendous feelings of being absolutely unworthy. I had zero confidence. I didn't have a voice. You know, I would literally start to shake sometimes if I had to speak with my teacher. You know, he'd say, Craig, just relax. Breathe. Breathe into your belly. Well, what's in your belly? Oh, that's where that wound lives. That wound of insecurity. So he taught me to breathe into that wound, to embrace it, to meet it with love. And when you meet it with love, the wound starts to dissolve. And it doesn't simply dissolve. It actually frees up the gift that the wound was covering. And so what gift does unworthiness cover? Unworthiness covers up your true divinity, your true strength, a true sense of autonomy and confidence. But the only way you can discover this autonomy, which is a quality of abiding awakening, a necessary quality, is through embracing every feeling of unworthiness within you. Every feeling. And so this is very important that we know this. Very important. And so when we uncover this wound, when we embrace it with an absolute love, we go from being wounded and feeling unworthy and not being able to house divinity. And by that, I mean we have no backbone. We have no backbone. But it's through embracing our wounds and meeting them with love that the inner child begins to heal and turn into a true adult, a divine adult. And this is the path of mastery. Most people think mastery is about intense discipline and having some great airtight philosophy. But that's not the path of the master. That's the path of the young monk or the young nun. Lots of discipline and lots of philosophy. And so say, for example, you have a great spiritual awakening. An incredible awakening. And you go on retreat with, you know, say you go on retreat with Adyashanti, an incredible awakening, and you come home. And when you come home, as soon as you walk in the door, your wife or your husband starts arguing with you. And then immediately, you feel challenged, you feel insecure. And where did your awakening go? Where did it go? You identify with your feeling of being unworthy. You judge yourself, attack yourself, hate your mind, hate your emotions. We've all done this before. Well, how do we heal this? We heal through going into that insecurity, through being humble, through breathing into it. And looking, is there something good here? Is there something true within me? Is there something beautiful and divine right here? Oh yes, there absolutely is. But what else is here? Oh, there's a little child within me who's scared, scared of being wrong, scared of confrontation, scared of this or scared of that. What does that child need? She needs me to breathe into her and meet her with love. And as you hold the child's hand through this process, she grows up. But if we ignore the child and judge the child, well, she revolts with anxiety or fear, or, you know, chronic fear, existential terror. Or we play this game where we just go back and forth, where we have these great awakenings, but we can't maintain it. And it's funny because, you know, I've watched a lot of teachers say, oh, don't go back into the ego. But the teachers who I've seen that teach in that way, whenever I hang out with them, I like hang out, you know, like on a personal level, I see, oh, they have great egoic shortcomings. They have great problems with their wife or their husband, or they go off and have an affair and their whole community finds out about it, or they're really mean to their children, or they're really mean to themselves, or, you know, they're like a closet alcoholic, or I'm noticing, oh, look at that. Look at what happens when we avoid the inner child. It tends to revolt with neurotic behavior. With neurotic behavior. So this teaching of never touching the ego again. Very poor teaching. The ego needs to be met with love. And as you meet it with love, it upgrades itself It's like when God floods anything with love. Anything. Well, whether that's your inner child or a dog that we pick up from the pound. When God floods anything with love, that thing becomes more peaceful, more awake, more secure. Secure. So if we have insecurity within us, that's not a moment for transcendence. That's a moment for love. Love provides security. Love provides healing. And by security, I mean true security, which comes from truly knowing who we are, from truly knowing we are okay. We are good. We are true. We are beautiful. And the funny thing is, when you embrace places within you which feel unsecure, insecure, we open up a new place within ourself to experience Satchitananda, to experience bliss, intelligence, incredible contentment, vast spaciousness and peace. And so our wounds are great doorways. Because if we have a wound and we ignore it, well, the door is shut there. The door is shut there. If there's one thing true of light and love, is that it loves the darkness. It loves unconsciousness. That's the direction in which it's traveling. It travels outward from the source of light into the darkness. And if we want to be awake in the world, if we want to live God's will, we discover what Jesus discovered. You work with those who are suffering. You meet suffering, whether it's within yourself or your children or your wife or your friends or your clients or students or whatever it is. Friends and family, you meet it all with love. This is the path. This is the path. And so it looks like I got about 9 questions all around that. And so I think I just picked one of the questions, and I think if I'm looking at them, I think I answered most of them. Oh, and so here's a good question, just to clarify here. How do we know we're healing? How do we know the wound is healing? Well, in a place where you once felt insecure, you will feel confidence. You'll feel strength. You'll feel the sense of what we call in Zen a backbone. There'll just be a sense of unshakableness. Now, this doesn't mean you don't experience emotions. Part of being radically open in the world is giving yourself full permission to experience emotions. Christ fell on his knees. The Dalai Lama says he laughs and cries in equal amounts every day. And hell, I can say I cry most days of the week. Sometimes I experience, or people tell me of such tragedy, such pain, such suffering, and they don't cry, and so I cry for them. I grieve for them. And it's healing. Sometimes it's the only thing we can do when we see such suffering in the world. But how do we know it's healing? We generally feel more spacious. We feel lighter. Now, for individuals who've had a really hard life, sometimes we have to do this thing which I call getting over the hump. So we might have to just trust that it's important to do the healing work again and again and again, and then things start opening up. When I was a young kid, I spent years and years on a skateboard, just falling and hitting the concrete, launching myself off. off big ramps and riding dirt bikes and rock climbing, doing all these extreme sports. And I beat the hell out of my body. And then I went and got a job working for my teacher, and he had me use my body like a workhorse. I built a temple for him and built a retreat housing and greenhouses and gardens. I dug thousands and thousands of holes for trees. We planted trees all over the property, and it was funny. One day I tried to count up how many holes I dug, and it was ridiculous. But it was silly. But I created such pain, such incredible pain in my body. And so I had to go to the massage therapist and go get some body work done. And I didn't have to go, one time. I had to go, probably hundreds of times. Had to, yes, Jay. I didn't dig 1,000 holes. I 1 foot deep. Yes, and so it's we have to be willing to go deep. We have to get over the hump. And so for those of us who are greatly struggled on this path, we have to get over the hump. And that may mean you have to, meet with a healer or a therapist or, practice your meditation. Hundreds of times. There was this teaching that one of my other teachers, Lama Soltram, gave me called Feeding Your Demons, and where you invoke the wound and you meet it with love. And I did that meditation, boy, hundreds and hundreds of times. I mean, probably at least 500 times, working with different wounds within me. But as you're working with this, you should feel a greater sense of lightheartedness, a greater sense of spaciousness, a greater sense of clarity, a greater sense of strength, a greater sense of love. And you'll be able to feel it with whatever, normally a wound is attached to a particular, excuse me, chakra center. And so for example, as a kid when I was young, the feeling in the house was just kind of like, shut up, don't talk. That was the general sense if my father was around. There wasn't any, we couldn't ask questions, of him. He called it an argument if we questioned him. I laugh now when I think back. And so I always had throat chakra issues. I had all this phlegm in my throat, and I was always hacking things up and always sick and had a sore throat or strep throat. And I was on all this medication to try to help with, all this mucus in my throat, decongestants and this and that. And so, I don't have to do that anymore. There's a clarity in my throat, even though I have a, kind of a funny sounding voice. There's things just flow through me. I don't really think before I speak. Things just move through me. And so this shows when the throat chakra is open. When your throat chakra is open, there's just this flow of energy that moves through you, and so you feel that. You feel that. The other day I was meeting with a student, and as we were doing some of this deeper work together, his head went back, and he started to have these kriyas. If any of you know that, that's when your head kind of shoots backwards and it feels almost like your head gets stuck, all the way back. It's a common thing when the kundalini awakens. But his throat chakra had opened, and then he started, these tones started coming through him. These different sounding ohms were coming through him, and it was quite beautiful. It was very healing for him, to open into this. And so, it's important. It's important just to be humble and to not be afraid if things are difficult within us. Not be scared. We have to remember this path of love. And love embraces pain. Love embraces pain. And so if we look at this, you know, what would it mean to have an abiding awakening? Well, there's a transcendent sense, you know, where you feel vast and spacious and timeless and eternal, and you're living in the ever-present now. But simultaneously, there's an unconditionally loving aspect to your nature. As we look at that, what does that mean, unconditionally loving? That means we embrace everything. Everything. We embrace all darkness within us, all unconsciousness. It just seems like, oh, this is the way. This is the way forward. And at some point, after you do this work long enough, there's this strength that just descends into you, where you're no longer afraid. You're no longer fearful. And so to step into this state of abiding awakening, and we may just ask ourselves, what's here within us? What's here within me right now that wants my loving attention? What's here? Is there anyone I need to forgive? Do I need to forgive my own self, my own egoic nature? Do I need to relax that inner critic? Do I need to let go of my great expectations or my confused expectations of what the spiritual path is about? Because for many of us, many of us have this idea that the spiritual path is about getting to a place where we don't feel pain. And I'll say the opposite. You feel pain much more so, but for all the right reasons. But you're no longer afraid of it. It doesn't affect you the same way. And so this question of what's within you right now? What's here that's wanting to be loved? That's wanting to be embraced? That's wanting to be acknowledged? Is it your absolute beauty? Is it your absolute innocence? Or is there a wound here? Or how about both? Is there pain here and beauty? And are you willing to open to both? And so I thank you all so much for joining me this evening. Thank you, Regina and Felix, for the donations. Those are greatly appreciated. Thank all the others who I can't remember right in this moment, for the donations. For any of you who don't know, there's a link on my website, craigholiday.com, with two L's. That there's a donation link if you want to offer something to help support the teachings. And I just want to thank you, you know, all of you who showed up this evening. You know, so many of you have such beautiful hearts. And I feel all of you with me. So thank you so much. Thank you for filling my evening with the grace and beauty of your own nature. Peace be with you all. And have a good night, good morning, whatever time of day it is where you are. Peace be with you. Take good care.